Welcome to the Chocolate Cake Bites podcast. This is a podcast where we will discuss the sweet nuggets of goodness that come from living the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm your host, Ken Williams. The opinions, attitudes, thoughts, and ideas that we discuss are those of the hosts and guests and are not necessarily a reflection of the actual doctrines of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Thanks for listening and enjoy this week's conversation. And once again, we're back. We're back with fan favorite and personal favorite.
Don't tell Marcin, me.
Don't tell Marcin I said personal favorite. It's Annette. It's Annette, all the way from not her house.
I am all the way from not my house. I'm a few hours away from my house, but not, unfortunately, closer to you.
Oh, wow. You said unfortunately. I like that.
Yes, because that would be fun to come and visit. I really like your daughter.
She's all right. She's okay. So just, oh, I'll tell you off the air. Okay. We got a text yesterday about some visitors that we're expecting in the near future, that if you can pull this off, it would be a grand party.
Wow.
But I'm not going to give details yet because I don't want anybody to crash my party.
So, I will be there.
So we have had, I think this is episode 4 in a row where we talk about decisions. The first one was called Decisions. The second one was called Decisions. The third one, I went off brand and I didn't call it Decisions. Maybe I'll call this one. No, this one is going to be called A Bad Decision is Better Than No Decision.
I like the theme.
So, oh, I saw a video yesterday. Maybe this will rear its ugly head as we talk about it. But this was a TEDx talk about how to make decisions faster. Ooh. So maybe you'll have to go to my coaching podcast to learn about making faster decisions, because that's really a coaching conversation. But no, so the context of this, the reason that this came about, and should I put a teaser in for next week? Next week, I think we might talk about, I could throw this in at the end, because who knows, I may change my mind. I do have it written down now, so I don't change my mind. But I was listening to a podcast. This was from a mentor of mine, Jody Moore. And she said on her podcast, a nugget that I sent to Annette. And Annette said, ooh, let's talk about that. And I said, let's talk about that. The nugget was, Jody said, making a bad decision is worse than not making a decision. Or a bad decision is worse than no decision at all. And so, question A, what was it that got the ooh response out of you with that nugget? A, is it true? B, why? C, continue.
So, I had never really thought about that before. And I have been on this journey of challenging my beliefs and so here's something that I think about a lot of things, and here was something that I hadn't actually really given much thought to that I remember. There's a lot of things in my life that I don't remember. I think that's probably true for everybody.
Sure.
I have no recollection of pondering on this question/statement. And then my brain immediately went to, well, obviously a wrong decision is not better because it's a wrong decision.
So, yeah.
And then I thought, no. I had a little inner dialogue argument.
I love it. Take us along the journey.
And I said, no, because if you don't make any decision, then you're stagnant. And
true.
If you make a wrong decision, at least you're moving. And I'm also going under the good faith that you didn't make a wrong decision, like to simply make a wrong decision. You were trying to have progress.
Right.
So, but even then, like if we learn from the things that we experience, then even a wrong decision made in whatever good or ill faith is probably better than no decision at all, because growth versus stagnation.
So can you make a no decision that ends up better than a bad decision or a wrong decision. First of all, do we need to consider bad decisions and wrong decisions as the same thing or as different things?
I consider them different things. I actually picture in my mind like a flip-flop floating down the river.
Okay.
And because I've gone on a lot of like river floats and there's always errant flip-flop, right?
Yeah.
So that flip-flop might get to the end point. It might reunite, but it's at the mercy of the current.
Right. And maybe it gets stuck by branches or a rock or something like that.
Right. Yeah. In fact, we were on a float trip and my friend lost her phone. She had it in one of those sleeve, the thing that goes on your arm, the patch, and she had it in a plastic bag. Well, it eliminated some of the, or created friction or eliminated it. And it just popped right out of that arm pouch and ended up in the river. And about a month later, she got a phone call from some guys that found her phone and tangled up in some branches.
Oh, wow.
And so I think if you were making no decision, you're just kind of like being carried by the wind, by the current, by, so you might end up in a good place.
Okay.
But I don't think you're going to have the growth that comes with making a decision that might be, I'm air quoting, wrong.
Okay. So this raises new questions for me.
Ooh.
So at what point, we talked recently about, the decisions that you make one time. I've decided I'm not going to drink alcohol, for example. I don't need to make that decision over and over again. But the decision to never go to a restaurant on Sunday, I've challenged because of different circumstances. Mm-hmm. We talked about that last week. So the question is, how do you, and you said that you're on this this journey of challenging your beliefs. What is it that makes you decide that it's okay to challenge this belief and I'm not going to challenge a different belief? Or maybe you'd challenge everything.
I'm pretty much challenging everything. And what really triggered the journey is, I think probably with my brain injury and realizing that the lived experience of people with chronic conditions or disabilities is so incredibly different, so much more different than I ever even could have imagined.
Mm-hmm.
I had a job. I worked at a deaf school. I've had dipped my toe several times into the deaf community. And I have friends that have disabilities. I have, I have dipped my toe into it, but never so fully immersed. And I saw this quote says, doing your best looks different every day.
Hmm.
And before my brain injury, I would have disagreed with that completely.
Okay.
When you do your best, you do your best.
Right.
And for the most part, I think it's consistent in a lot of people. When you do your best, it's fairly consistent. You have your elite athletes, and when they're playing at their best, like every once in a while, they're off their game.
Mm-hmm.
But then now living, and my brain coach that I've worked with, she kept saying, no, everybody, that's true for everybody. And I was like, no, we kind of argued about it a little bit about how that. And she said, no, like if your best is you got yourself out of bed today, that's your best.
Right.
But then maybe the next day you went out to a restaurant and into a store, two big things in one day like that. And maybe you could do that. And then the next day, like you couldn't get out of bed, but you could do this other thing, so giving grace to how different our lived experiences can be.
Right.
Really kind of just went like, all right, where is my thinking core here of like even just the simple statement of doing your best looks different every day. When you take into consideration your past, your current experiences, what mental load you're carrying, what physical, emotional load you're carrying, what spirit, all those things.
Right.
And so me personally, I'm in a place that I'm comfortable enough challenging everything. And I feel generally really safe doing that. I don't necessarily recommend everybody do it unless they're in a place where they feel safe.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of fear around. You start challenging certain thoughts or beliefs, mm-hmm. and it could cause your, you know, when you have the cards, what is it? Oh, a house of cards to fall.
Yeah. So I think a lot of times in a religious context, when we talk about challenging beliefs, we assume that you're only looking at religious beliefs. And maybe that's all you're looking at, but
nope, all of them.
And that's what I was getting at, is that we're talking about all beliefs. So my next question is, if you challenge, let's just say you challenge a belief,
okay.
The belief that your best looks the same every day, and you realize, nope, that's not true. At what point do you go back and re-challenge your challenge?
Anytime somebody says something and I think that's not true.
Okay.
So if I catch myself saying that's not true, then I know it's time for me to go in and re-examine, because something's shifted or happened to where I'm now unwilling to consider somebody else's lived experience. Ooh. And how it might differ from mine.
And that might be a key right there, that you're making an assumption that somebody is wrong because their lived experience is different than yours.
Right.
Hmm.
And, you know, we've talked about like being raised generally around the same decades, years. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about being raised by, you know, the same named people.
The same people in physical form too.
And we've had completely different lived experiences.
Yeah.
We've sat in Sunday school classes and young men, young women activities and heard the same thing, mm-hmm. and walked away with completely different messaging.
Right.
And I was in a meeting. Used to serve in the Stake Young Woman, and I was in a meeting where we were talking about, should we allow, we had a young girl on the SYC committee, the Stake Youth Committee. We were planning youth conference, mm-hmm. which you had to be 14 to go to at the time. This was before, it was a couple years ago before they changed the ages. And we realized she was 12. So we were 12 years old girl plan youth conferences she couldn't attend. And so we were talking to all the other stake leaders, me and one other gal, of like, do we allow her to come to any of it? Because mm-hmm. it felt really tricky to us to ask her to plan and do all of this stuff and then yet not be able to participate.
Right.
And so we're in this meeting and it gets brought up, and should we allow her to attend the entire weekend or just certain parts? Mm-hmm. And we left the meeting and I've said, that's disappointing. I was hoping that they would say she could at least attend. We were going to do some work at a cemetery, mm-hmm. that she could at least do the cemetery stuff. And this other gal said, what are you talking about? They said she could come to the whole thing. What? We were in the same meeting. You know, well, he said this. Well, oh, I didn't hear that, you know? And so giving that level of grace and compassion, that even just because we're sitting in the same room doesn't necessarily mean that we're hearing the same thing or even paying attention.
Yeah. Well, the thing that came to my mind was a comment by your brother, who's not nearly as old or wise as I am. I don't think he listens to this podcast, but Mom sometimes does.
I'll be sending it to him.
She'll tell him I said something about it. But no, I had posted on Facebook about my hair. Which is just my point. I told a story about how when I was in junior high, I hated my hair. I hated it. It was just, it had cowlicks. It still does. And didn't go where I thought it should go. I have the most impressive case of bedhead that you probably have ever seen in your life. And Greg said that, yeah, that's genetic. Look at Mom and Dad. Yeah, I know. It is spectacular. But so the point of my story was that everybody else had a very different experience. When they looked at my hair, they thought it was nice hair, or, and I'm using adjectives that people have told me, amazing, perfect. And I didn't see it. I didn't see it at all. In fact, when people would come to me and comment, they would compliment me on my perfect hair or my amazing hair. I literally thought they were joking. I thought they were making fun of me. I thought it was a joke, and I can take a joke. So I, I hate it too. And that was my response every single time up until about 10 years ago. It was not that long ago. And might've been a little bit more, 12. But Greg's wisdom, I mean, I shouldn't use his name. I have a sibling who's not nearly as old or wise as I am. But his wisdom is, this is a reminder that we see the world as we are, not as it is. And this is true, I think, for everything that we talked last week about situations where two people can have a similar lived experience, like you were talking about, similar parents, similar siblings, similar, et cetera. And their lived experience is so different. And there's danger, I think, in making the accusation that you're wrong, because even though I was not you, but I did live in the same house. I had the same address. We had the same parents. We have the same last name for a lot of our lives.
Yeah.
But you're wrong. You're wrong. That's not what mom and dad did. That's not how it went down. So I'm curious, how are you going to bring this back around to
I'm going to do
bad decisions, bad decisions and no decisions? Because I think the way that we experience things absolutely is an important reminder. Because the way that we are, and this is why we read patriarchal blessings over and over again, or why we read scripture over and over again, because we change. And so what we gain is
the lens that we're reading it through changes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It, you know, I think as I've been thinking about this statement, wrong decisions is kind of ballsy. Sorry for that. It's really because that's coming from
gutsy?
A place.
Can I say gutsy?
Sorry. Gutsy, can you edit that out? Sorry.
Sure. That's not my beep. That's my applause.
Oh.
Was that a wrong decision?
No.
Okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Because it's coming from this place of fear.
Okay.
Assuming. Tell me more. Well, if you're saying it's a wrong decision, you're assuming that there is a right decision, first of all.
Right.
And that you've made the wrong one.
Or that somebody's made the wrong one.
Yeah.
It depends on who's talking.
So, right. And it's also like, are you talking about your own decision or what you perceive as somebody else's decision? Like, they shouldn't have done that. It would have been better if they had done nothing. That's pretty judgy. Yep. So we should be challenging those thoughts.
Okay. So this is where, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I'm going to say this. No, I'm not. I was talking to Marcin the other day, and I said, you said something that Coach Ken has to respond to, but I know you want to hear a response from Ken, your husband. But Coach Ken is the one who's speaking right now. So I hate to do this, but I'm going to agree with you that when we talk about somebody else's decision as being wrong, there are two words that we forget to say. They're the words in our head, but we forget to say, for me, that right. decision that you made was wrong for me. Because again,
saying their lived experience is the same as my lived experience because we have these similarities.
Right. So let's make this a practical example.
Okay. As long as it's about not me.
Okay, let's make it about your...
My friend?
Your friend. We're going to call her Lynette.
Okay.
No. No, let's talk about... Because I think a lot of times when we start talking about wrong decisions, we're thinking about other people and the decisions that they make. Their wrong decision is well, their decision is wrong. So, you and I both have kids who have made decisions that are different than what we would have made in our, based on our experience.
I tried to make a lot of the decisions that my kids made, but I just wasn't as successful as they were.
No, you're not going to do that. You're not going to move out of the house when you're 14 years old. So if you have somebody who's making decisions that are objectively wrong, could be, there could be a legal component, there could be a health component, could be a financial component, could be an educational component. They drop out of school, or they give money to scammers, or they ingest substances that are not healthy. Whatever it is, whatever the decision is that's, quote, wrong. How is that better than no decision at all? Because in some of those cases, no decision might include not giving money to the scammer, or not ingesting those substances, or not doing the thing.
Well, I think that that's a short-sighted perspective.
Okay.
Now, this is not me, like, in my own life experience. This is me objectively thinking about something that I'm not triggered by or traumatized by.
Traumaticized.
Yes, that's.
We're making up words.
Now I've totally lost. What did I say? I've lost my train of thought. Rewind that back.
You're not talking about your own lived experience. You're not talking about things that you've been traumatically affected by. Traumatized by.
What did I say before that? What was your question?
So I need to go back to my question. Okay, so somebody's making a decision that is objectively wrong.
Okay, yeah, all right. You're making an assumption that it won't work for their good eventually.
Oh, okay.
And there is a scripture, I was going to try and find it, that says... I like the wording of it because it doesn't say all things will work for your good, but I think it's can.
Okay.
Like all things can work for your good. Like, and I feel a little bit better about that.
Okay.
Where, I mean, I know people that have made rough decisions that right. put them in very undesirable situations, legal ramifications, jail, whatever the case is. And they sometimes have a stronger testimony of Jesus Christ and of the atonement than people that who have never made a bad decision
right.
or a wrong decision. And so it goes back to just coming from a place of fear of make the decision. And I know we've talked about this before, like make the decision.
Right.
And then,
and stick to it,
and stick to it, and kind of just see where it takes you. Because our brains are also wired to keep us alive, and that keeps us from doing things sometimes yep. out of fear, out of anxiety, and it could be situational anxiety, it could be clinical anxiety. Both are absolutely real and very, very valid. That mm-hmm. sometimes prevent us from stepping into that unknown and wanting to just stay in the comfort of no decision. But sometimes making no decision, like that flip-flop, you might end up in a place that you actually didn't want to be that would have been worse for you financially, emotionally, spiritually, physically, than if you had made the air quoting bad decision or the wrong decision.
Yeah. This happens way too often, but I'm distracted by a cat.
I'm trying really hard to not be like, I'm going to die on this hill. because I might change my mind. True. But I'm really feeling very strongly today in this moment that I would rather make a decision that blew up in my face and have a little bit of say in where I land and mm-hmm. and be able to go through the accountability and owning my part and, you know, whatever that experience was, than aimlessly floating on the wind and having life happen to me.
Yeah. So there's a, so I was on a call earlier today where we talked about three levels of awareness. And the first level is, things just happen. They just happen to you. You're kind of at the mercy of everything. And this is the way I view no decision. It's that flip-flop. You just don't decide anything. Things happen. I work with people who have bad bosses. And so you just, the boss comes in, he's demanding, he's a micromanager, you don't like it, and you just live with it. So the next level is where you have some awareness of your ability to choose. And so this is where I'm still intrigued by the idea that at what point do you look at some of those decisions? Is this something that, do you wait until things get uncomfortable? Do you wait until things get, and where do you draw the line of discomfort? Do you wait until it's unbearable? Do you wait until it's a minor nuisance? And I'm thinking here, so just to put things in context, I'm thinking about, because I work with people who have bad bosses, and I've thought a lot about my own experience. And so my experience, my last couple of years, the boss that I had was a little bit tense sometimes. And I learned some things, and at what point during that two-year journey would it make sense for me to, I'm getting my answer as I'm asking the question. So maybe I can keep up with everybody else. But so at some point during that journey, that period of time where this is not my ideal, but I'm not making a decision to make a change, whatever that looks like, to leave the company, to leave him, to approach him and share some insights, some feedback, some complaints, whatever that looks like. So if that question makes sense, I'm interested in your thoughts as my thoughts continue to form. So at what point you realize, so you, in this, the continuum, you've got the, I'm just going to float along and let things happen. And if I end up leaving that boss, it's because it just happens. He decides or the company decides that it's no longer going to work out. And so I don't have to come back to work anymore. So that's how I would describe no decision at all. I'm not making a decision. And really there, that's not entirely true, but rather right. than get into
no
that.
No decision is a decision, but.
Right. But you're still kind of, you're drifting. You're in the passenger yeah. seat of your life. So, and then things get to a point. I was talking to somebody just a little bit ago where things got to a point where he realized this is not going to work out. And so at what point do you decide to take control of the situation and act rather than being acted upon? Is my question making any sense?
Yeah, it actually, well, I think if you said what I heard, then it did make sense.
Now, I'm not going to be able to repeat that quote from Dad. That I know you think you heard what I thought. Okay, say it.
I know you think you heard what I said, but I'm not sure you realize that what you heard is not what I meant.
Perfect. I love it.
I don't know how I committed that one to memory and I've never lost it. But
it works.
I think, I don't know if it's a human thing or if it's a church culture thing. I'm not really sure where it comes from, but having a all or nothing mentality. Mm-hmm. So I've been working really hard to free myself, as I've recognized I do have an all or nothing mentality about a lot of things.
Okay.
We have a sweet, sweet friend who's autistic, and she competes every year in the local county Miss Abilities pageant.
Okay.
And I think she's 36 or 37 years old. Mm-hmm. And it was about a month and a half, 2 months ago. And it's the highlight. I thoroughly enjoy. Our county does a fantastic job. They brought in they have a junior Miss category now. So they've got all ages, and it's a full-on pageant with like actual pageant judges. It's very legitimate in the pageant world. And they do the evening wear, and they have the talent competition, and they do their another outfit. I can't remember what they call it, but I really look forward to going every year. And we were going to go, and I had kind of overdone it on my brain, and mm-hmm. my brain was just like, I'm not having it. It had checked out for the day. Okay. And I was talking to Barry, and I said, man, I'm really disappointed. I really want to go. And he said, well, why don't we just go for part of it? Hmm. Oh, it actually never occurred to me to just go for part of it. It just didn't even occur to me. Sometimes if I want to go to a thing, I went to a bridal shower the other day, and before I even left, I was like, you don't have to stay the whole time. I'm talking to myself. You don't have to stay the whole time. You mm-hmm. can leave at any time whenever it's not working for you anymore.
Okay.
And I have some different rules just because of the nature of my brain injury. And if I'm driving, I have to be able to drive home.
Right.
So I don't need my brain to check out and be like, oh, bye. I'll see you tomorrow. You know? And so giving myself permission, like it's not something that I used to think about ever. I used to think if I've made the decision, I guess I have to see it through. Mm. Some of that is a little bit of the mentality of being raised by boomers, the baby boomer generation, mm. and being a Gen Xer of like, you don't quit.
Right.
You joined that soccer team, and by golly, you are going to play on that soccer team.
If it kills
and
you.
I think there's the difference between just quitting and this is not serving me anymore. It's actually doing harm.
Okay.
And so being able to give yourself permission to say, I've made this decision, but it is not what I thought it was going to be. It's mm-hmm. actually, it's not serving the purpose that I thought it was going to serve, to be right. able to back out at any time. I don't think there's any shame, but in actually doing that, I don't know if it's a generational thing. I don't know if it's an age thing, but there is a level of shame sometimes that we experience of like, well, I'm a quitter. Not a right. quitter. I don't know. Did I answer your question?
Probably. So the next question that comes up for me is, how do you distinguish the difference between making and committing to a decision and changing your decision when it's not working out?
Wait, how do I distinguish between that?
Yeah, what's the difference between making and committing to a decision and changing your decision when it's not working out? So I'm just going to come up with, I'm going to make up an example.
Okay.
That, let's see. If you didn't bring up sports teams, it came up in my head. So as far as I'm concerned, okay. You brought it up. So I'm going to play on the soccer team, and mom and dad expected us to be committed. I played on the Little League team. So you're committed, you're going to play, you're going to go play the games, you're going to go to the practices. And that's the commit. That's making committee to a decision. Uh-huh. And then they are going to do travel games on Sundays, which in the environment we grew up in was not something that they would have supported. So at what point do you, is it a boundary thing? Is it a, I'm not going to play anymore because I can't support the playing on Sundays? Is it a, I don't know.
Well, I think really we're the only one that can make the judgment call on, am I just quitting because I don't want to do this anymore? Mm-hmm. It was harder than I thought it was going to be type of thing. I'm uncomfortable.
Right.
I'm a little uncomfy in this, or it's actually, this is not serving me, or it's causing harm.
Okay.
We had one of our kids was in competitive gymnastics and wanted to quit at some point. And we did have some conversations, you know, as a parent to a child about the reasons to quit. What are the, help us understand, you know, what's happening, because this is something that you've been really passionate about or you really loved. And then trying to, you know, especially in a parent-child relationship, getting the understanding of what's the motivation. Oh, you'd rather just sit home and play video games? Yeah, that's just not going to happen. Yeah,
okay.
You know, or like something's happening in that environment and you don't feel safe. Oh, then let's absolutely address that. And then I think if we're talking simply about ourselves, and we've talked about this a little bit, and I can't remember if it's been on the podcast or just, you know, off the record, about sometimes mistaking feeling the spirit or feeling confirmation about something is simply just we're uncomfortable.
Right.
And it could be our brain looking for an excuse to not do a thing. So I think it does take some personal reflection about what is the motivation here. But it's absolutely also okay to not stay in a situation that's dangerous for you. We moved at one point. We had this great plan. We were going to be apartment managers. Mm-hmm. We were going to save some money so we could buy a house. This was early in our marriage. We did all the research. We found an apartment complex. We went over there. We interviewed. We felt really good about it. We took the job. We moved. We lasted about 2.5 weeks. And we weren't safe. Our kids weren't safe there. There was some, the owner had misrepresented some things. Misrepresented how safe it was and the environment it was in. He also told us we wouldn't be having to pay rent, but then he tried to collect rent from us. And we were like, wait, what?
Right.
You pay us. We don't pay you.
Right.
And we were like, we struggled a little bit. Like we said, we would do it. We committed. We were glad that there was we're going to give each other a month to see if they like us and we like them. Mm-hmm. It was kind of both sides knew that anybody could back out at any moment.
Right.
And we did. We moved our family, our children. We had to hurriedly find another place. And I'm really glad we didn't stay in that situation.
Yeah.
Because physical harm could have come to any of us.
Right.
You know, we made what we thought was a good decision, but it was a wrong decision. And so giving yourself permission to step out of a wrong decision, if that's what it ends up being, or letting it play out, see if it was, oh, this is actually a really good thing, man. I almost didn't do this because I didn't think it was going to be good.
Right.
You asked something about the difference. And I think if you're not being an active participant in your life and you're just going, you're not making any decisions, it puts us in a prime position to be in a victim mentality all the time.
Right.
And that's a whole other episode.
It's more than one episode. It's a whole lot of other episodes. So I think you're right. I think you're right. So I want to touch on one thing that may bring us close to full circle. You said something that off the record was a discussion that you and I had about everything can work for our good, or it does work for our good, however you want to interpret that. And I want to talk about that because I think that brings in some level of perspective. The two words that we add in our heads when we say that's a bad decision are for me, and it doesn't consider the perspective. So a baby chick breaks out of its egg. And I don't know if this is true. I don't know if it's somebody making up stories to make a point. I don't know. But the way I've heard the story is if you open up the shell for them, you don't allow them to break through, what happens to the chick?
The story I've heard is they die.
They die because they don't have the strength. And so I think this idea that everything can work for our good, which I know that there's some pushback on that because how can teen pregnancy work for my good, or how can a job loss work for my good? And I think whatever the situation is that we can't see how it's going to work for good or for our good is because our perspective is limited. I think a lot of times when we read scripture stories, you look at, you could pick any story, but just for the sake of this conversation, Lazarus. Lazarus is sick. So word is sent to Jesus, Lazarus is sick. Your friend, who you love dearly, is going to die if you don't come back. And so Jesus deliberately waits a couple of days. And Lazarus's sisters, Mary and Martha, are upset that he waited so long. And they complain to him, if you had been here, our brother wouldn't have died. How is that for their good? How is the death of their brother for their good? Well, scripture stories are interesting because we have the whole story. But if we think about the middle of the story, that's, we're in the middle of our story. So when you have the brain injury and you don't see how this is going to be for my good, hey, Barry, or whatever the situation is, when you don't know how it's going to work for your good, it's because you're still in the middle of the story. If you are, so Lazarus's story, that experience worked for everybody's good because Jesus came, raised him from the dead, and he was able to show his power. He's able to demonstrate some of his characteristics. He wept with the sisters of Lazarus. And so we have some deep stories, some deep experiences demonstrating his characteristics. So when you look at the whole story, the whole experience, it worked for everybody's good.
Right.
So I don't know if that rings true to you, that this idea that it works for a good. So I think that what if I'm not careful, I look at what my kids are going through, for example, or what I'm going through for that matter, and I think, I just want it to be easy. I can't tell you how many nights I would go into work when I was working at FedEx. I just want it to be a smooth night. I just want the rain to hold off all night. I want everybody to show up. I want it all to work out. Everything comes in on time. Everything goes out on time. It's all going to be good. And then I go in and I find out that three of my peer managers called in. And so it's me and one other guy. We're covering the whole operation, six managers worth of teams. And how does that work for my good? Well, I gained some skills that have helped me navigate other difficult situations in my life. I learned what I was capable of. I learned where my blind spots are, et cetera. So.
But also, I'm going to yeah, but you a
no,
little
bit. No, yeah, but me, please.
Just a little bit, but not really.
Okay.
Sometimes you might not find out. We're in the middle of the story, right?
Right.
That thing that's really hard, you're in the middle of the story, and maybe you don't know yet, right? Sometimes like we look at senseless deaths and what's happening all over the world and how is this working? We don't know because we're in the middle.
Right.
And I would never say to anybody who's in the middle of something like, well,
this is going to work for your good.
This will all be
chin up
for them. Right? Right. They might be Lazarus.
Right.
In that story. And I mean, it ended up being okay for him, but not for a lot of other people in, you know, that lost their life or whatever. So I think being able to like take a bird's eye view and just remember that there is a different perspective. Maybe you're in the middle. I keep telling myself that a lot. Like I better be in the middle because if this is the end, I'm gonna be so grumpy.
At some point this is gonna end. So
it's a really long middle.
So here's how I'm going to wrap it up. You can yab at me, please do, but
all day.
I think here's my perspective after we've talked. And this is as I've had, I'm going to use a little spiritual manipulation. How about that? This is what God has told me.
Wow.
okay. No. Here's the way I see this. If I look at those two levels of awareness, there's the first level where things just happen. In the scriptures, we read that there are things to act and things that are acted upon. This is the level of being acted upon. Things just happen.
Right.
I can't remember if this was recorded or not, but we were talking recently about the gift of agency, the opportunity that we have to choose. And so if we make a decision, if we are exercising that agency, if we're choosing, we're acting, we're not being acted upon, that's better every single time than not exercising our agency. Any agency that we exercise, any decision that we make, ultimately is going to be like that chick breaking through the egg. It's going to give us strength. Back to the example, I would love for my kids to just coast through life, but they don't gain the strength, the resilience. Look at your kids, look at my kids. The ones that have had the biggest challenges, the biggest struggles are the strongest because they've had to become the strongest. And so I think agency is a big part of it, that exercising our agency is always going to be better than not exercising our agency, or even worse, setting down our agency for somebody else to exercise on our behalf. No, the end of what I was going to say.
I have to agree with that.
Oh, where's my pushback?
Well, I mean, like, you finally are seeing my perspective. How can I agree with me? I mean, disagree with me. I have to agree with me.
Yes. Please, please agree with yourself.
Welcome to the dark side.
Oh, my goodness. So should I tease? Do you, anything you want to add before I tease what we're going to talk about next week?
No, I'm excited for the teaser.
Oh, so
love everybody.
That's going to be the solution. Yeah. No, I was listening to a podcast, which I do quite a bit. And this is Mike Rowe, who's the Dirty Jobs guy. And yes. One of his guests said, she's talking about employment and the struggles that companies are having with employees. And so that's the context. But I think the context is much bigger than what she was intending. Her comment was, we need to stop treating people as expendable. So discuss.
I cannot wait.
I think that there's so much here that I really want to dig into.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited.
Cool. So we'll talk about that next week.
I just invited myself.
Cool. That'll be fine. If Barry will let you.
I'll ask him.
Barry just got back from a meeting, and so they're getting ready to leave the sunny state of wherever they are, going back to the whatever state they live in.
Sunny state of wherever we live, yeah.
There you go. All right. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Chocolate Cake Bites. Please like, share, subscribe, and give us a 5-star rating and review. We'd love to hear your comments and ideas, and you can reach out to me at ken@chocolatecakebites.com. And before you end the day, take a few minutes to consider, who do you know who needs chocolate cake?